Hello, I'm Bex and welcome to the Week Junior Show. Today I'm joined by three of the team from the Week Junior, the magazine making sense of the world for 8 to 14 year olds. Today we've got managing editor Vanessa.
Hello.
Writer Flora.
Hello.
And assistant editor of the Week Junior's monthly Science and Nature magazine, Kieran.
Hello.
This week, we'll be talking about the new coronavirus restrictions, an anti-bullying campaign, and rumours of alien life in the solar system. Plus, we'll have a debate all about exams. But before all of that, seeing as we're going to be talking about Venus, I want to know, what would everyone take with them on a mission into space? Vanessa, you can go first.
Well, I think I'd have to take the thing that goes with me whenever I go and stay somewhere away from home, but that's my diary. Because I've kept one since I was 11, and I feel that if I went to Venus, I would actually finally have something interesting to write in it.
Oh, great answer. Do you keep a diary of just like, this is what I've done today, or is it like thoughts and feelings?
Mostly what I've done today. So there's quite a lot of lunch is quite heavily represented, what time I went to bed, whether I had a good night's sleep. Honestly, it's so dull. And there's years of it, years of it. So yeah, some poor archivist in the future is going to be falling asleep over that. But unless I go to Venus.
Yeah, well, sure. Unless you'd be very organised in space, though, so you'd be fine. Flora, how about you?
Well, I was thinking that actually probably a journey to Venus would take, I don't know how long, maybe like months. We'll find out, I'm sure. So I was thinking it's actually probably going to be quite boring. And I could entertain myself with a whole collection of OS maps of the UK. Because I just quite like looking at them and sort of discovering routes and... they're so detailed, you know, you could see like whole little villages, and I would just sort of look at the OS maps, I guess, and that would entertain me. Or I would take, you know, a few books I'd always meant to read, like The Brothers Karamazov, some Russian novel.
So we should say, OS maps, that's Ordnance Survey, right?
Yes.
Right. So again, Flora, I love this. You're just bringing us up a peg, you know, you're naming Russian novels. You're giving us OS maps. This is brilliant stuff. Kieran, what are you going to do here?
I'll be honest. I feel like I'm lowering the tone of this podcast massively. My idea was to take an alien costume with me, because then sort of when the cameras were off or whatever, I could slip into the costume and pretend that we'd met some extraterrestrials and sort of scare all the NASA scientists into thinking that we'd made contact with alien life. Not quite Russian novels, but, you know, I think it has its merits.
You have very much brought us back to Earth with a bump there, Kieran. But to be honest, mine isn't much better. I was thinking I would take as much chocolate as possible, maybe a lifetime supply of Cadbury's, if I could fit all of it in my spacesuit. I don't know whether it would melt in space. I'm not too sure. So I think Kieran and I are probably on the same page in that respect. But Flora and Vanessa, very, very noble endeavours, I would say. I want to find out as well, what is everyone's favourite fact from this week? Vanessa, what have you got for me?
Well, I learned that Barbados, the island of Barbados in the Caribbean, gets its name from the fig trees that grow there. They're bearded figs. They look quite unusual. They don't look like fig trees you see in this country. They're enormous as well. And the Portuguese name is Los Barbados, which means bearded ones.
Oh, great fact. Flora, how about you?
I learned that the word virus comes from the Latin word for slimy liquid or poison. And actually the word corona comes from the Latin word for crown. So coronavirus is crown of the slimy poison.
Oh, I don't know whether that makes it sound worse or better, but that is a great fact as well. Kieran, how about you?
I'm embarrassed again, because we've just had two brilliant facts about the history of language. And my fact is that the most expensive toilet cover ever sold cost £900 at auction, and it previously belonged to a member of the band The Rolling Stones.
Not even an actual toilet, just the toilet cover.
Just the toilet cover.
Wow, yeah, you're right. That is a very different fact to the two before it. But all facts are valid in this forum. Don't you worry, Kieran.
Thank you.
Right, it's time for real or rubbish. Kieran, tell me, what story do you have today?
Let's see if I can redeem myself with this one. So this week's Real or Rubbish story is about Pepsi, which is the company most famous for making drinks that contain lots of sugar and caffeine, which is a chemical that keeps you alert and awake. And the news is that they're launching a new drink in the US which does the opposite. It helps people to fall asleep. So this drink will be called Driftwell, and it is mostly just water, although there are a few extra ingredients in there, including a chemical that you could find in green tea and also certain types of mushroom. And there are some scientific studies to back up these ingredients that say they could improve the quality of your sleep. So do you think Pepsi, the company that is most famous for making drinks that keep you alert, is now changing tack and is going to make a drink that helps you fall asleep? Or have we just watered down the truth?
Oh, that was good. Well, first of all, of course, you can get drinks that are meant to help you sleep a little bit better at night, but they're generally warm drinks. They're generally quite hot, aren't they? Mm-hmm. And Pepsi are not known for making their hot drinks. But I guess this would be them kind of covering all their bases and you know, and covering the whole market of nighttime to daytime, morning time drinks. Not that you drink Pepsi in the morning. I'm so confused with this, Kieran. I don't know. I feel like I'm going to talk myself in circles.
Would you drink it?
No, because I sleep ridiculously well. But there is something, it feels a bit creepy to drink a drink that would put you to sleep, like a kind of elixir from a fairy tale.
Mm.
Oh, you're not giving anything away, are you?
No. No, it's all up to you, Bex. Gotta get there by yourself.
Oh, right, okay, well, thurks for that, Kieran. You've left me in the lurch there. I'll have a little think about that. And if you're listening as well and you've not read your copy of the magazine yet and you don't know the answer either, feel free to make your guess before the end of the show and we can find out together. So now it's time for our three favourite stories from the week. Now, these are big stories at the Week Junior Magazine. Flora, what's the biggest story for you right now?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I can't say this is my favourite story, but it's definitely one that's been covered in all the papers this week. So it's a story about the new coronavirus restrictions announced by the government on Tuesday. So at the start of this week, the government's medical advisers warned that the rates of coronavirus were doubling every 7 days at the moment, and that the next 6 months are going to be quite tough. So following this warning from the government's medical advisers, the Prime Minister Boris Johnson met with the heads of Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland to form a plan. And then he made a speech to the nation in which he announced that in England, for the next 6 months, restaurants and pubs will have to close at 10 p.m. Adults will be encouraged to work from home rather than the office. Sporting events will be on hold and indoor sports will be banned. The same rules apply in Scotland and Northern Ireland, but these countries have also banned people from visiting other people indoors, which isn't the case in England. And meanwhile, in Wales, people are encouraged not to make unnecessary journeys. So these new restrictions come on top of rules that were announced 10 days ago, the Rule of Six, which you might have read about in last week's magazine. And that rule means that you can only meet up with six people at any one time. And when these new restrictions were announced this week, 13 million people in England alone were already living in local lockdowns. So I guess it didn't come as a huge surprise to a lot of people. One silver lining is that grandparents who look after children under the age of 14 are allowed to carry on. And the government says that this is really a way to prevent the second lockdown and that their big priority is to keep schools open, keep education going.
All right then, Vanessa, what story do you have for us this week?
Well, I have something pretty positive, actually. The big anti-bullying assembly is going to be taking place on the 28th of September. And this has been set up by the Diana Award, which is a charity that supports young people. And the idea is to put an end to bullying, celebrate diversity, and create communities of kindness. That's what they've officially said it's for. And it's taking place on the 28th of September. You can sign up before the 28th of September. Schools can go to antibullyingpro.com and you'll find lots of advice for students and parents and schools. Get training, there are activity worksheets and all sorts of things to tackle bullying. Anyway, the assembly itself will be broadcast over YouTube and it will help kind of welcome students back to school. And as part of it, there will be celebrities who have been bullied who will share their experiences. So Gareth Southgate, who manages the England football team, will be there. The TV presenter and Paralympian Ade Adepatan, who was bullied at school because of his race and disability, he will be there telling his stories. And I hope that these stories will help bullies to kind of understand that what they're doing is very wrong, and it'll give people courage to speak up about it. The bullying obviously is a big topic at the moment, and the Diana Award research found that more than half of young people in the UK have been bullied. Now, bullying is not just obviously somebody saying something unkind. It's defined as repeated negative behaviour that is intended to make someone feel upset, uncomfortable or unsafe. And of people who've been bullied, more than half of them said it wanted made them want to skip school. 44% said it made them want to miss social events. And 37% said that it was actually affecting their schoolwork. So it's a really serious problem. Racism is also playing a part in the bullying that's going on. And 32% of students said they'd heard something racist at school. So, you know, we need to celebrate people's differences and support anyone who's being bullied. What you should do is tell a teacher, guardian or parent or adult that you trust. And there's lots of advice online for exactly what to do if you are being bullied. You can find it at childline.org.uk. If you click on the go there and then click on the info and advice tab, and the antibullyingpro.com as well. So this assembly is really to highlight the problem, to bring everybody together and to really kind of get out in the open so that people can talk about bullying. But on a more positive note, a survey last year found that 72% of young people in the UK who experienced or saw bullying reported it. So we're really tackling the problem.
Kieran, tell me, what do you have today?
I think this is possibly one of the most exciting scientific stories we've ever done on the podcast, because even though it's still the early stages of this particular discovery, it could lead to us answering one of the biggest questions ever, which is, are we alone or are there other living things elsewhere in the universe? And this comes from a study done that was looking at the clouds over the planet Venus. And Venus is on an orbit that means that it comes closer to Earth than any other planet. It's a real near neighbour within our solar system. And scientists led by Professor Jane Greaves from Cardiff University in Wales were looking at the clouds over Venus, and they spotted a type of gas called phosphine. And on Earth, phosphine is only naturally produced by microscopic living things. So if the same thing is happening on Venus, then that means there are these tiny living things floating in the clouds over Venus, and it would be the first time that we've ever found life anywhere other than Earth. So it could be this massive discovery. However, there is a bit more work needed to work out whether or not that's the case, because there is no further evidence of tiny living things on Venus. It is just this gas that is produced by them. On Earth, we can also produce phosphine ourselves using factories and that sort of thing. But of course, there's no factories on Venus, so that doesn't quite answer it either. So the team of scientists who did the research are now asking other people in the scientific community to have a look at their research, have a look at all the data they've got, and see if they can come up with any other suggestions that don't involve living things that could solve this question of what the phosphine is doing in the clouds over Venus. But it's really exciting, and it makes sense. If we were going to find life on Venus, it would probably be in the clouds, because on the surface it is incredibly hot. It's in the sort of 370 degrees area, which is ridiculously hot and obviously very difficult then for living things to survive there. But as soon as you start to head up into the clouds, and it's thick clouds on Venus, the temperatures drop down to a level that we would experience on Earth ourselves. So there it makes sense that there could be living things there. But of course, it's even though it's a close neighbour of a planet, it's still a long way away from us. And so if the team of scientists aren't able to solve the mystery themselves, then they might need to wait a little bit longer, possibly into the 2030s, when the US space agency NASA is planning a mission that would send a balloon through the clouds of Venus, and that could possibly provide all the answers that we need.
2030s, that's a long time to wait.
Isn't it just? But hopefully, we might get some more answers before then. Someone might come up with a solution that, you know, says, oh, actually, the phosphine is produced by, I don't know, the natural landscape on Venus, there's no living things involved. Or it might be that we narrow it down and think, actually, do you know what? It seems pretty likely that there are at least some tiny microscopic living things floating around.
Time for the big debate. This week we're asking whether exams are the best way to test pupils. So who can tell me a bit more?
I can. It's a very straightforward debate this week, but I'll give you a couple of statistics. So in the UK, only 40% of school pupils aged between 7 and 14 years old think that exams are a good way to test knowledge. A study in 2007 by researchers from three universities in the US found that preparing for and sitting an exam can improve your future learning and increase the amount of knowledge that you can remember. A different study in 2014, carried out by a university in France, found that 60% of students dreamed about exams the night before they took one, and more than three quarters of these dreams were scary and involved being late for the exam or forgetting answers.
I have definitely had those dreams. I'm intrigued about this. Okay, so I'm going to be challenging Vanessa and Flora on this one. Vanessa's up first to say why she thinks exams are the best way to test pupils. Vanessa, do you have a timer nearby?
I do indeed.
Excellent. Whenever you're ready, take it away.
Well, I think there are two things going on here about whether exams can test pupils and how well they actually get information into your head. I had a pretty fluctuating career with exams, I have to say. One year I got 37% in maths, and the next year I got 73%. So I can witness they're not always reliable, but generally they're well designed and planned by teachers who are, after all, experts in working out how much someone knows. Battering the information into your head really means that it sticks with you, I think. Without the big hurdle of exams, I'm just not sure how well I would have lodged knowledge into my brain. I think that learning how to store and retrieve the information that you've shoveled into your head are very useful skills that you will need for the rest of your life, along with keeping time and disciplining your ideas and hitting deadlines. These are all fantastic skills to have. Finally, once they're over, yay! The feeling of picking up your bag and chattering to your friends outside is the best ever, which I think also teaches you a useful skill, not to brood on what might have been. You've done the paper, it's in the past, now move on with your life. For all the stress they cause, exams are a good thing.
I mean, a bit over a minute there, Vanessa, but I'll give you that. right, Flora, it's time for you to go. Do you have a timer nearby that's hopefully a little bit more...
I do.
Excellent, okay.
I might give myself an extra 10 seconds if I feel like it.
To be honest, I mean, I'd love to see what Vanessa's clock looks like. Yes, you get...
It's in another room. I can't see it from here, but I have got a timer nearby.
Yeah, that makes more sense now. Right, so Flora, it's up to you. When you're ready, take it away.
Okay, well, I think there is such joy in learning new things and letting that information swirl around your mind and seeing how it connects to other things and just reading more and more about it. But then you have to sit an exam and answer endless, tedious, multiple choice questions about that wonderful knowledge. And suddenly all the magic and the imagination and the wonder around that knowledge just goes. It becomes just a means to getting the grades to pass the year or go to the next school. And exams just wring all the joy out of learning. Besides, they're not really an accurate measure of someone's intelligence, as Vanessa testified. People who do really well in class can be terrible at exams because they get so nervous, or perhaps they can't concentrate for the full amount of time that you have to sit in a hot, hard, cold chair. My personal memories of exams are huge sports halls that smell of sweat and feet, with no natural light and an irritating fly buzzing around. And of opening the first page and just feeling all the knowledge that was in my head draining out of my ears. It'd be so much better if teachers could assess you throughout the year, and perhaps at the end you do a few low-pressure tests just so you know you've got the knowledge. Otherwise it's too stressful and too traumatic for many people to really perform as they otherwise would.
I mean, you definitely did give yourself extra time there, didn't you?
But only 15 seconds.
Only?
Yeah.
My goodness, two absolute loose cannons here today with their clocks and their timing. I mean, obviously very well argued, but I am, as the clock timekeeper here, furious at that flagrant disregard for the times. Kieran, what do you think about both the timing and also the argument?
Well, of course, I feel resentful to award any winning here when the rules were broken. However, I am going to agree with Flora on this particular argument. I think exams are a good way to test pupils, but as she suggested, they should be a smaller part of that, and other things should be taken into account as well. So I don't think they're the best way to test pupils, no.
Well, I'm obviously furious at both of you for massively going over the time. Flora, you're now on the list. But I do think, I think exams are good. I think they're helpful to figure out where you're at. And I know sometimes revising just means you remember something and then it immediately leaves you. But I think actually it's a good way to figure out how much knowledge you've got in there. So this will be really interesting. Listeners, let us know what you think. Respond to the poll online. Go to theweekjunior.co.uk/poll or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk with a video clip explaining what side of the debate you support and why. Last week, we debated on the podcast whether humans should trust robots. And it was pretty close, actually. 46% of you said yes, 54% said no. Here are some of the comments.
On PopJam, one listener wrote, "It depends what sort of robot it is, because I have an Alexa Dot, and I trust it, but I don't trust other ones." Someone else agreed, saying, "You can trust some, like the ones you have as fake pets, but not the ones that you have to rely on. Personally, I don't like robots."
Another listener commented, "You should not rely on robots, but if it's a toy one, like Lego Boost, then that's fine." Someone else wrote, "It depends, really. I'm not that knowledgeable about robots, but I think they should get a fair chance."
A lot of the comments said that robots were fine now, but might not be in the future. So, for example, one listener explained, "I don't think so. People will lose their jobs and the future could be mostly robots and some humans." And another wrote, "At this time, yes, but as society develops and robots are getting smarter, then they may become harder to trust."
Oh, some good points of view there. So as you heard, this is your chance to get involved. If you want to hear your voice on the podcast, grab a grown-up, record a video telling us what you think of this week's exam debate, and send it in to us at hello@theweekjunior.co.uk, and we could play it on next week's show. Time to reveal our real or rubbish story. Kieran, can you remind me what it is again, please?
Of course. So this week's story is that Pepsi is making a new drink designed to help you fall asleep.
Oh man, now this has really stumped me because it feels like it could be a great new innovation, and I know Pepsi and Cola are always trying to think of new things, but also it seems like the opposite of what they tend to do. I am... Oh, man. And also, unlike Ben, you're not trying to sway me either way, so you're not trying to... You're just giving me the information. I'm gonna say it's rubbish. Yeah, rubbish. Yeah.
Can I get a drum roll, please? It's real. Yes, it is real. And you're right. It's the company's constantly trying to come up with new ideas. The company asked its employees to come up with what they think the next big drink would be, and they decided it was something that would help you relax and sleep better.
Do we have a name for it?
It's called Drift Well. So
you did say that.
Drifting off well into sleep, I suppose.
Yeah, it made me think of like a piece of wood in a river. Yeah. Oh, man, I'm annoyed I got that wrong. Man. Right, well, you tricked me this week, Kieran, but next week I'll have my own back. Maybe, perhaps, probably not. That's it for this week's Week Junior show, so thanks so much for listening. Goodbye to Vanessa.
Goodbye.
Flora.
Bye.
And Kieran.
Take it easy.
Drop.
Why did no one else do that?
Betrayal. Betrayal.
I was thinking, you cowards. You cowards. Okay, I'm going to leave that there. Drop us a comment on PopJam at The Week Junior or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever it is you get your podcast. Goodbye.
If you want to get your hands on a copy of The Week Junior magazine, we're offering a 6-week free trial. To get yours, head over to dennismags.co.uk/theweekjunior and use the code PODCAST.